bringing you the ag information you need. This is Market Talk, produced by the American Ag Radio Network. Now, here's your host, Jesse Allen.
And good afternoon. Welcome into Market Talk here on this Wednesday, May 25th. Great to have you join us. Thanks for making us part of your day once again. I am your host, Jesse Allen. You can find us online, find all of our radio affiliates, streaming sources, and much more, all online at markettalkag.com. That's our home on the web. Markettalkag.com is where you could find us. And again, thanks for joining us here today. The markets really started off with a risk-off tone, then just kind of grinded it out today, grinded their way back towards unchanged as best as they could. Plenty of things to discuss in the market trade. Let's say good afternoon to our good friend Mike Zuzulo with Global Commodity Analytics on this Wednesday. Mike, how are you, sir?
Doing great. Thanks for having me back, Jesse.
Of course. Anytime, Mike. We appreciate you being on, and a lot to talk about today. I think just for starters, when I looked at the commodity board this morning, I was like, here we go again, another risk-off day in the trade, a sea of red. And then, you know, all in all, when it was all said and done, not a bad day today. We really kind of grinded it out against some of that downward momentum across the grain complex today, Mike.
Yeah, and I think the spring wheat really showed the fundamentals back to where they belong when it comes to the supply side. And the fact that the spring wheat planting is just absolutely dismal in Minnesota, North Dakota, and they have very little chance of catching up. And so when you think spring wheat and you think of Northern Plains, you might as well include most of the key areas of Canada as well, because they're under the same type of weather pattern. And last I heard, there's still not many planters rolling up north of the border. And I think we're really in a situation where the spring wheat can take over as the fundamental leader to the upside, the fundamental supply leader, the fundamental weather leader to the upside at this stage. And I think Wednesday's trade, Jesse, was probably the beginning of that. The corn seemed to want to find some support from somewhere after the ethanol data showed that the stocks are the lowest since middle of January, and the production was the best level since the end of March. And so we had, in part for this correction type weak mindset, we had in part the energy secretary and the Biden administration talking about rationing or curtailing fuel exports heading out of the United States. That was on Tuesday. I think that really took a toll on the energy bulls in the ethanol, especially not so much in the soybean oil, because canola was rallying it on Tuesday's trade pretty sharply. But I think those bulls jumped out in canola today because it was down 3%. And I think that's why the beans felt a lot heavier. And it wasn't a day like we'd seen at the end of last week or the beginning of this week where the trade was buying soy and selling corn and wheat. All three tended to come together. But I really like the fact that the spring wheat and the ethanol data allowed the July corn to make at least three new highs in the last 20, 30 minutes of trade, got us back to that 772, 774 area, just under 775 in July corn. That's a massive area of support for me on the monthly corn chart.
I'm glad you mentioned that on the soy side here today, too, because that was going to be one of my questions. I was surprised with the heaviness there as we got to the close, despite, you know, some of these rumors in the trade that maybe the computers are trading a little bit, Mike, just with the news about Russia. You know, maybe they're going to let Ukraine export grain, although it seems like talk right now. And, you know, that weight on the corn market, plus the China-Brazil news this week. And, you know, so it really didn't seem like there was a lot of soy news out there to move that market lower today. But I interesting note you had there, and I definitely like your explanation there. But looking at some of those news items here this week as well, do you feel like that is going to be a predominant weight here as we head into the holiday weekend?
You know, I don't think so as much to the downside, Jesse, as long as especially we hold the lows from today on Wednesday, because from high set just 6 days ago, hard red wheat now is down 13%. That's plenty of correction given all fundamentals, if you wrap them all together. This is a pretty neat weekly chart on the hard red wheat. It shows a lot. And notice the yellow bulls that you typically tell us not to recommend cycles and our recommendations, and that they're not reliable. And I agree with that. So, but what I like about the cycle mindset is the sentiment idea. And I'll get to that in a second. And so the yellow bulls indicate about every 10 to 12 weeks a low. And then we got the 2022 and I changed the color of the bowls to two black ones and one purple one. And the black ones suggest that that cycle was stretched out, that it's more like 15 weeks or 14 weeks or 16 weeks from low to low. And so if that ends up being the case, then we are due for the next cycle low out there where that purple bull is sitting out there at the right-hand side of the chart, right around that big trend line support. So we've gone through the March highs. We've gone back below that March high, and that's where the purple arrow is. Not a lot of support on this chart until you get to the trend line support, except for Wednesday's low. That's a critical area, in my opinion. Otherwise, you're probably going to have to test that trend line and then get to a point where the market feels like it's exhausted. So now, why did I say I don't think that the downside's that much? I say that specifically about the people that are trading the Ukrainian news. I think that you're right. The headline news algo bulls that were in this market from essentially the beginning of 2022, late 2021, are jumping out because they see this corridor maybe opening up, this humanitarian corridor, which to me is an oxymoron if Russia's involved. And Ukraine's already come out and said, this is crazy. These people are not going to do this. And this is the British foreign ministers come out today and said, we are not going to back down on our sanctions just to meet Russia's some of Russia's demands. And so unless the West wants to pay a heavy price and probably at the expense and humiliation of Ukraine, I just don't think this humanitarian corridor is going to open up. I think, like a lot of people out there, this is probably a more of a ruse for the Russians to get the Ukrainians to clear the mines from Odessa and for them to be able to take the biggest port, the crown jewel of the Black Sea for Ukraine and their grain exports, Odessa. So I'm very dubious, very skeptical that this corridor, humanitarian corridor, is going to open up. And last thing I'll say on that is the main reason that is because Russia's got plenty of buyers to the south and the Middle East and plenty of buyers to the east in the other other Eastern European countries, not to mention all the Southeast Asian nations that they can ship to as well. So why would they help the West out at this point?
I think we share that sentiment as well, Mike. And this kind of all circles back then to some of the planting issues we have in some areas. Now, huge jump in quarter bean planting nationwide last week. But again, those areas in the north, still big issues. And, you know, today is one of those final days for crop insurance, for full crop insurance. Now, right. I've heard talk there will be plenty of farmers who will plant after today if they can. But one has to wonder if maybe some crops don't start getting switched here across some of those acres in the north. And in a year where presumably every acre counts so much, I wonder how much that could impact the trade here in the next maybe 7 to 10 days as we get a better idea of any acres that are switched across the north and even into parts of Canada, Mike.
Yeah, I get the exact same sense from producers, Jesse, that after June 1, which is essentially next Wednesday, producers are not going to monkey around and take a hit on their crop insurance payouts because they're such high levels, especially in some states. I think it was University of Illinois or Ohio State did a study not too long ago, and in the Northern Plains, some of the numbers were trading projected to be upwards of $17 a bushel on prevent plant for soybeans. So I don't think the traders, I don't think the farmers are going to monkey around with that and mess a good thing up in that respect, especially given the uncertainty in this world market right now. So I do think you're going to lose some spring wheat acres. I think you're going to lose some corn acres. The European model is not in agreement with the GFS model as far as an opening up for northern Iowa, southern Minnesota, and Wisconsin, which that's kind of the heart of and soul of where the big corn and bean acres are that are not getting planted. And I was pretty disappointed. While Iowa got to 86% planted, there's a large chunk in northern Iowa not planted, and Minnesota was way down there in plantings for corn, as was North Dakota. And I think we are going to lose some acres in those areas. And so that projects you out into USDA's 177 yield and current acreage base. You don't get above a 1.35, 1.4 crop ending stocks number. You could cut some demand out if we ration demand, but there you're still only getting around a 1.5 billion bushel carryover as we, I think, see southern Brazil corn stocks and production go down. And I think France's production is leaning towards a downside as well. So when I look at it in its totality, the trade still likes buying beans and selling feed grains when they feel like they're getting into a bind or when they feel like the inflation supply side weather bowl is over with. I don't agree with that. I think it's the exact opposite. The fundamentals would suggest that because we're looking at 100 million metric tons of ending stocks in soybeans this coming year if we get what we got planted as USDA projects without any kind of yield hit. So I'm still more of a mindset of paper positions in corn and so that I can pull those paper positions off if there's a correction and leave the cash sales be right now.
I want to talk a little bit more, Mike, about the correlation between corn and natural gas. You sent me this chart as well. We'll pull it up on the video. And, you know, been plenty of talk about natural gas here in recent weeks, along with all the energies, but even this week as well. So talk about this correlation and walk us through what you're seeing here.
Yeah, this correlation is on the purple part of the chart, the bottom part. That's a three-month correlation between lead month natural gas and lead month corn. And notice that it was upwards of 90% positive. So 90.9% 0.9 movement means almost a one-to-one positive movement or a one-to-one negative movement between the two. And that made sense because as we got into planting, the fertilizer, the Russian-Ukraine issue, the corn issue, they were all the same. We couldn't get fertilizer. We couldn't get corn out of the Baltic. And all of a sudden, the corn and the natural gas really started to move together. So what we've seen, though, Jesse, in the last 30, 60 days, 40 days maybe, the breakdown of this correlation to where it's almost neutral. That makes a lot of sense because the trade is now back onto what's going to happen in the summer, what's going to happen in Europe in the summer, because Russia's cutting off countries like Finland. I think they cut them off this week. It was either them or Sweden. And so we're up to the highest levels, as you say, since 2008 in natural gas, but corn is not playing along. The reason I think this chart is important is because I think this correlation may come back together, not only from a standpoint of natural gas and corn trading together, but also unleaded and corn trading together, especially with this potential policy move by the Biden administration. But think about it. If you're at $4.70 a gallon gas around the country, you're going to look for any amount of ethanol possible to knock that price back down so that you don't lose demand. And so E85 is going to be, I think, red hot. And even the E10, E15 blending will remain red hot as long as we don't mess around with policy. So one of the leading indicators, and this is for the viewer and why we're talking about this chart today, is the idea that if the natural gas and corn correlation come back around to a strong positive relationship, I'll immediately look at unleaded in corn as well and start to reconnect the dots that maybe, just maybe, the commodity index funds will come back in and buy energies and buy grains and corn as a basket. And I think that's really something that's necessary at this stage to give us new highs. And it's something very necessary from a standpoint of keeping the funds and the index funds especially engaged in this long commodity mindset.
Mike, let's flip over to livestock, and I'll pull up a cattle chart here we have on the video, and we'll start with the cattle market. You know, today I was a little disappointed, I think, in the livestock trade. We were mostly higher around mid-morning across cattle and hogs, and then we kind of reversed out of that here into the close and saw a few, we'll call it more mixed trades. What's your thoughts on cattle today, and also walk us through this chart?
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to the packers and the feedlots, it's a buyer's market still, Jesse. And I think that's where the disappointment you're feeling comes in. We saw on the cold storage report 17% more beef than last year at this time, 18% more pork as opposed to March 30th of 2021. So the supplies are still elevated, and therefore the packers are not messing around with taking on too aggressive bids. I actually heard a bid from a packer in Kansas all the way down at 135. And so I think that's why it's a sloppy trade. Having said that, I do like the fact that we are trading just off of that 130 low on this June chart. And I should explain to the viewer that the most important part of this chart is this is June fat cattle only. This doesn't have April or August or Dece or Ocken. And I've stripped out all the other contract months. And those monthly bars that you see are only June contracts for each of those months of each of those years. And so that's what I like about the value level analysis and going to specific contracts when I talk to clients and subscribers. So my undervalue is 130. We just bounced off of that. I feel like with the cash market, say roughly 137, 138, and June at 133, there's still a very positive basis in the cash market. There's no incentive right now to hedge unless something big would come out of the equities markets or something come out of nowhere, essentially, that would make me think that we are going to take out that 130 level. And if we do take out that 130 level, that June chart doesn't have a lot of support until you get down to around 125, 126. So it is something to watch for, but I would like to think that we are still undervalued and that we should be able to get back towards the 140, maybe even get up towards that 143 and a quarter level that I would deem as overvalued. That's where I want to hedge.
I posed this question a couple times in recent weeks, and I'll ask you the same. You know, it felt like the hog market we've seen recently, we went down, tested some support, found a bottom, and then started to come back, although we were, you know, chopping around a little bit today. It feels like maybe cattle is setting up to do the same. It feels like there's still a lot of upside here, but maybe, just maybe, what we're seeing in the hog market now is it may not be a huge run-up. It could be we're going to find a range here for a little while as we get into summer grilling season. Do you think that could be a possibility here, Mike?
Yeah, I do. And I think this makes sense from a standpoint of whereas the cattle have a discount on the futures, the hogs have almost a $10 premium, a $7, $8, $10 premium against the cash index. And again, we have a very ample supply. If I remember right, I've got the numbers here. It looks like the hams were up 26% versus March of 2022. And I spoke a minute ago wrong. It was April 30th of 21 that the year-to-date numbers go by. But boneless loins, 13% higher on the month. What that shows you, Jesse, is between the hams, the loins, and the butts, which are up also double digits, is everything essentially we've been killing in the pork sector has been going into the freezers, going into the cold storage. It's not really going into the meat cases and being sold. And so we have a consumption issue at this point in time. And I think that's just something we're going to have to work through and sell high levels, elevated levels, get them hedged, and then leave it be if we have a weak basis, a strong basis like we do in the fat cattle right now.
I was just kind of perusing around social media and looking online. I didn't see much news from the Fed here today. I know some folks in the trade were watching their comments or maybe perusing through the comments to see if there were any nuggets there. I didn't see much. Have you seen anything, Mike?
Yeah, I have actually. While we were talking, some stuff was popping up, and it looked like to me from what I looked at right before we went on and when I was glancing over here, the trade, I think, is expecting the Fed to be a little bit more aggressive early on, and then they're going to take their foot off the pedal and watch. And that makes a lot of sense to me because interest rate hikes, mortgage rates, things like that, they take 3 to 6 months to actually get into the real economy. And the latest data that we see right now, whether it's housing starts or whether it's retail sales, some of the newest stuff that's come out this week, the S&P manufacturing data, services data, it's all starting to slow down, Jesse. And I think it's slowing down in varying degrees. I think the Fed sees that. And so they're going to meet the market demands to tame inflation early on. But I think then as we get into the June, July timeframe, they'll probably take a pause, which that's really kind of smart, in my opinion, so that we can see exactly what that rate hike does. And we'll see how the bond market reacts to it. I think the biggest gray rhino, as they would call it, that's something you think know about that's out there, but you don't know when it's going to run you over, essentially. The biggest gray rhino out there that I'm starting to feel is that if things get too much worse between the Chinese and the United States and Russia, is that China's sitting on $3.3 trillion of U.S. currency through U.S. bonds. What if they decide they want to start flooding the market and selling those bonds because they want to set up their own currency relationship with the rest of Asia and with Russia and their new East buddies? And I think that's a real issue as we get into the later part of the year. I hope the Federal Reserve's watching that as well.
Well, we always enjoy the analysis, Mike. Any final thoughts you have for us today?
Well, on that same track is what, and you bring up a big point. I think that's why the dollar's been gyrating so much recently, Jesse, but I think the fundamentals are pointing more towards a lower dollar or a weaker dollar unless something comes out that really looks, the U.S. economy looks much better than all the rest out there. But I think the trade's starting to get a little bit tired of being long the dollar. That should work in our favor as we get in the second half of this year when it comes to our exports, because we'll still have tight supplies in the second half of this year.
Well, Mike, if producers want to check out your analysis and get marketing advice and work with you, I know they could do that very easily. What's the best way?
One of the ways is to make the phone ring like it was when we were talking a minute ago. Call 866-471-2588 after the market closes. I will pick that up unless I'm talking to Jesse. Otherwise, go to the website, globalcommresearch.com, and there's a little form there. You can sign up for a subscription or just request a free trial in that same subscription form.
Globalcommresearch.com is the website to check out. With that, Mike Zuzulo with Global Commodity Analytics. Appreciate the time as always on this Wednesday, sir. Have a great weekend ahead, Memorial Day weekend coming up.
Yes, and thanks for all the service to all our service members, especially and all the loved ones we've lost. Thank you, Jesse.
Appreciate it. Mike Zuzulo with Global Commodity Analytics. That's going to do it for the show on this Wednesday, May 25th. Find us online, markettalkag.com. I'm Jesse Allen. Have a great afternoon.